one of honorable members. Morning, honorable members. Am I audible? Am I audible enough? Okay, I'm told if it can be quiet, then it will be audible. Good morning, everyone, honorable members. We've got the GTI and Labour, I'm told. But I think before we start, it is our custom to always formally introduce ourselves so that when we speak to one another, we know who we're speaking from. I will start with myself. My name is Dorothy Ramudibe, the chairperson of this portfolio committee. And then I will start on my left.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ipuseng Celia Dipetelo, a member. Thank you.
Good morning, Dumelang. I'm Grace Becker, the member of this committee. Thank
you. Good morning. My name is Kiki Kwasana, member of the committee.
Sanbonani Mudumalo, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Connie Diemo, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning. My name is Connie Musimani, a member.
Morning. I'm Sierra Pauls, a member of this committee.
Morning to everybody. I'm Helen Lemuller, member of the committee.
Department of Trade and Industry. Lisa Stato, also Department of Trade and Industry. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Marika Kremen, and I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, I'm Sigana from Trade and Industry.
Lisa Stato, Trade and Industry.
I work with the Parliamentary and Cabinet Services Unit in the Ministry for the DTI.
I am a director in the office of the DDG.
Morning. My name is Ntombi Shangase. I'm the director for Gender and Women Empowerment at the Department of Trade and Industry.
Good morning, I'm Sipho Zigode. I'm the Deputy Director General at the DTI. Thanks.
Good morning, Naresh Singh. I'm the Deputy Director, Policy Development, Employment Equity, Department of Labour.
Morning, I'm Titus Nsweni, the Acting Director, Employment Standards, responsible for Child Labour, the Department of Labour.
Morning, my name is Nelson Obata and I'm the committee secretary of the committee. Thanks.
So, members, can we shift for the honorable member? Honorable member Kekana. We have just introduced ourselves. Can you do the same? Thank you. And once more, you are all welcome to this meeting. The purpose of our meeting, we have invited the Department of Trade and Industry and also the Department of Labor to come and brief this committee on employment opportunities and skills development for women and people with disabilities. That was from the Department of Labor, and also the Department of Trade and Industry also to come and inform this committee on the employment opportunities and skills development for women and people with disability. Initially, we were told that the Department of Labor was not going to make it due to some of the, you know, their other commitments, but then I was then told by the Secretary that they have since responded to say that they will be available. Hence, we are now going to have Department of Trade and Industry starting with their presentation, and at 11:30 we will then move to the Department of Labor. We really appreciate your honoring our invitation, and we hope that at the end of your presentation we will actually get to know as to what is it that your departments are doing for these vulnerable groups. Without wasting any time, can we allow the Department of Trade and Industry to take us through? Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, again, good morning. We are very happy to be here to present on the work the Department of Trade and Industry is doing to emancipate economically women, the youth, and the people with disabilities. I'll go through the presentations. As you have heard, I have with me here two of my colleagues who will be assisting me with questions at the end of the presentation. Without that, maybe we just have to say something about the vision and the mission of the Department of Trade and Industry and how the gender and women empowerment section is fitting to the whole broader picture. This is the vision of the DTI, that of South Africa that has a vibrant economy characterized by growth, employment, and equity, built on the full potential of all its citizens. The mission is broken into several parts. Through the, you know, the understanding of the economy, the ability of the DTI to identify economic opportunities and potential, we act as a catalyst for the transformation and development of the economy and respond to the challenges and opportunities of the economic citizens. We do this by providing predictable, competitive, equitable, and socially responsible environment for investment, enterprise development, and trade within South Africa, within Africa, and the rest of the world. The DTI mission continues. We now turn to the Gender and Women Empowerment Unit. It is within the division called Empowerment and Enterprise Development Division of the DTI. And this unit, called the Gender and Women Empowerment Unit, was established to ensure that the empowerment of women forms part of the broader mandate of the DTI. Through this unit, the DTI is tasked with the responsibility to champion women economic empowerment and participation. As I've said, the unit is located within the Empowerment Enterprise Development Division, which I lead within the department. And this division facilitate broad participation and the overall restructuring of the South African economy, mainly focusing on the mainstreaming and participation of the previously disadvantaged people. So the gender unit, it promotes, contributes, and provides gender-sensitive policies and programs for trade and industry. It implements women-specific programs, foster networks, linkages, and partnerships for strategic opportunities. As we are doing this with many bilateral and multilateral organizations like the United Nations, and also plays the lobbying and policy advocacy for women empowerment. Further on, we do a lot of research in the area of women enterprises, gender equality, to gain better understanding of the opportunities and challenges facing women enterprises. We also facilitate the introduction of women-owned companies and enterprises into the value chains of big corporates and multinationals. As you honorable members know very well, in 2008, Cabinet approved the so-called 10 set-aside products. These are the products that are frequently bought by government at all levels down to the municipalities. So we propose to government that maybe these products should be procured from small enterprises, mainly the enterprises owned by women and the youth and people with disabilities. Lastly, we facilitate the inclusion of new entrants in the economic space and registration of women-owned businesses operating in the informal sector. This is just a schematic diagram of the unit within the division. On top there, the EEDD is the Empowerment and Enterprise Development Division. The unit is headed by the chief director, but at the moment that position is vacant. So my colleague here, Ndombi, is playing the role as an acting chief, coordinating all the work at the moment. We will be filling the position very soon. All the work of the unit is guided by the strategic framework on gender and women economic empowerment. This piece of strategy we are amending it now because of new developments that have happened. But the old strategy was developed around about 2006. And below that, these are the programs that we manage in the unit. The first one being the South African Women Enterprise Network, Women Entrepreneurs Network, the Technology for Women in Business, Techno Girls, ISIVAN, the Women's Fund, and Bavumile, which is a capacity building program, and then the so-called women-owned factories in the collaboration with the Chinese. A few words on the National Strategic Framework. With the assistance of the International Labour Organization, we are finalizing the National Strategic Framework on Women Economic Empowerment. This was informed by detailed research, on the challenges and opportunities that women face out there in the economy. The whole process is led by the Deputy Minister, Elizabeth Tabete. This framework outlines several programs focusing on women enterprises, women in business, and other targeted groups. And it addresses the gender inequalities with the aim to enhance resource allocation and pave the way for women and for full participation in the economic growth of the country. One of the, as you remember, in that schematic diagram, we have the ISIVANDE Women's Fund. As we all know, all the researchers at the moment, they point to the fact that of all the, you know, the economic players, women, they still face all sorts of barriers in accessing finance, in accessing non-financial services from government and from the private sector. So we decided that we'll establish this fund just to target those women, mainly, you know, in the rural areas who are at the entrance phase, you know, of the economy. The target really is to support the enterprises that have 60% women ownership. And this fund starts from 30,000 to a maximum of 2 million. The fund is administered by the IDC on the behalf of the DTI because they have all the facilities and the systems to manage a fund of this nature. And this is a low interest, very low interest loan. And so as the DTI, we cannot administer loan funding. It's only the grants that we can administer. So hence then the reason for us to take it to the IDC. I'm sure some of the honorable members, they might have heard about this fund. It started some years ago, but we had some problems, you know, with the IDC managing it, because the IDC, as a result of their act, they manage funds from, I think, from 1 million upwards, or they provide loans from 1 million upwards. So as a result, they had to get a contract, a specialist fund manager to administer this. So the fund manager is in place now, and this is progressing very well now. When it comes to the skills development, again, this is one area where, because of the past, our women entrepreneurs, women who are in business, they still lack skills in terms of managing the business. Although you might find that they have good skills in terms of working with their hands, making crafts, and textiles, but they lack, you know, the skill to manage their business. So we move from province to province, training about at any one time 20 to 30 women in a period of about a week on how to manage the business, you know, for finances, human resource, and all those things, and also increase the quality of their products. I think we have covered most of the provinces now. As I said, we provide special skills training and assist women to establish their own enterprises and cooperatives under this Bafumile Skills program. So in partnership, we see that we also provide additional training in packaging, customer service, basic bookkeeping, and the registration of their companies. This normally is 5-day training session which is provided to women in municipalities. A number of these women who have undergone this training run successful businesses in a number of provinces and have further assisted through the DTI incentive, which is called the Cooperative Incentive Scheme. Another program is the so-called Technology for Women in Business. Technology for Women in Business was introduced to accelerate women empowerment and women-owned enterprises development through the facilitation of technology-based business applications and systems. So what's happening here, we assist women, you know, to get things like ICT, information management systems, computers, link them into the internet and email so that they could easily communicate with their colleagues in South Africa and the rest of the world. And this TWIP program facilitates action by women entrepreneurs through the introduction of technology-based solutions to their business. We also reward women who use this technology to grow their businesses through the so-called TWIP awards, which we do in partnership with CEDA. The program focuses on women entrepreneurs at all levels of business, from micro to macro enterprises, and seeks to fast track their skills development to enable them to embrace appropriate technologies. Chair, this is just an example of the lady who won the TWIP award in 2011. She is in telemedicine business. It's a women-owned company that provides healthcare practice supported by electronics processes and communication and mobile health. Her company is involved in conducting healthcare needs assessment of communities, provision of diagnostics and treatment services. What's happening here, you know, as you know, in the rural areas, we don't have specialist doctors there. But with this technology from this lady, she's able to connect a specialist doctor in Cape Town to a patient in Malamulele, and the specialist doctor in Cape Town will be able to do diagnostic and provide a treatment advice to a nurse that is working on the patient in Malamulele through the use of technology, the internet, and the computers. The mandate of TWIP, the Technology for Women in Business, extends to programs that encourages young girls to choose careers in engineering, science, and technology, facilitating access to educational information, career opportunities, academic and extramural learning programs. Under the theme, A Girl Today, A Successful Entrepreneur Tomorrow, the angle taken by the DTI in this campaign is to encourage the young girls to contribute to the country's economic development and growth by becoming creators of wealth and job opportunities, not job seekers. So this is in the next slide, yes. This program targets 10 best schools each year from the previously disadvantaged communities. 10 learners per school are selected to participate in the TechnoGirl program. A total of 100 learners per province participate. And each school comes up with the best entrepreneurial idea, which is measured in terms of credibility and feasibility, practicality, originality, and durability. As I've said, this program is conducted annually in different provinces. And the winning learners, they are given awards, and at times the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry takes the girls overseas with her when she does overseas trips. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this year they will be part of the women that will be going to a delegation that will be going to Greece. Is that true? Yeah. And coming to the partnership now with the Ministry of Women, Children and People with Disability, we are partnering on the TechnoGirl program. This program aims to provide girls with access to the world of work to enable them to take up scarce careers required by the economy. DTI this year will be placing 100 girls for job scheduling for a period of 3 years. We'll be starting this year. Each and every business unit within the DTI, they have agreed to take one or two girls for job scheduling during school vacation in June and also in December. We'll be doing this for 3 years just to give the girls experience of what's happening at the workplace. Another program is the SAWEN program. The DTI adopted the SAWEN program as a strategy for fast-tracking support provided to women in addressing challenges faced when establishing, expanding, and sustaining their enterprises. SAWEN is a membership-based organization that has a mandate to represent and articulate the aspirations of all women entrepreneurs that operate within South African economy. Support services under the banner of STARWOMEN program include effective network forums, training and capacity building, pertinent business information and advice, facilitating trade missions and exposure to global economy, maintaining a reliable database of South African women entrepreneurs. And I think, Chair, the budget for this program alone at the DTI this year will be something close to 8 million rand. Over and above this, we also form partnerships with business women associations out there. The first one being the International Federation of Business and Professional Women, which is known in short as BPW, which is an international non-profit organization that has a consultative status with the United Nations through the Economic and Social Council. This organization aims to develop the professional leadership and business potential of women through advocacy, mentoring, networking, skills building, and economic empowerment programs and projects. And we have partnered with this organization on a number of programs. The first program being the United Nations Women's Empowerment Principles. The Minister of Trade and Industry, Dr. Rob Davis, launched this program last year, where about 100 chief executive officers of big corporations in South Africa attended, and they signed a pledge to advance women through the so-called CEO Statement of Support. So these chief executive officers, they signed the pledge that they will be abiding by the principles, the seven principles of women empowerment, as espoused by the United Nations, and which meant that they will be promoting the promotion of women within their companies to executive levels. The other program is the Women on Boards program, which is designed to discover, train, and deploy female management talent by fostering and strengthening the participation of women in boards. At the moment in South Africa, the women participation in boards is very low. Even at senior management, is very low, and the private sector always complains that there aren't enough women, who have enough experience to participate in boards. So as a result of that, and in partnership with BPW, we are training women to be ready to be appointed for such boards. And we will be visiting companies promoting these women after being trained. Another partnership we have, Chair and Honorable Members, is a partnership with China, which is also led by the Deputy Minister. Yeah, the idea here is to focus on the clothing and textile sector, whereby women-owned factories will be supplying China with the completely manufactured products from South Africa in this sector. It is based on the so-called Honghe model. Honghe is a district or a region in China whereby you'll find a big multinational working closely with smaller suppliers who supply material, who also supply finished goods to the multinational, and the multinational will then export the products all over the world using its own channels. So we are partnering with China here. It is still at the teething stage, but I think the focus will be in one or two provinces first before we roll out all over South Africa. We will be starting, I think, with Eastern Cape. I don't know which other province, but Eastern Cape is the one that is leading. Coming now to the incentives within the DTI, we have the cooperative incentive scheme, which is a scheme that is 90-10 cost-sharing grant for registered primary co-ops. DTI provides 90% of the required capital, and the cooperatives provide 10%. That's how we share the cost. The objective of this scheme is to improve the viability and competitiveness of cooperatives enterprises by lowering their cost of doing business. And this fund supports business development services, feasibility studies, manufacturing and production systems, and the production efficiency and improvement of their systems. It also supports technological improvements, machinery, equipment, and tools. We buy vehicles for the businesses or for the co-ops. We also support the infrastructure linked to the projects of those co-ops. Since 2005, more than 300, but I think the number is bigger than this now, have received support from the corporate incentive scheme. Most of the applicants are from these provinces. And then we also have another incentive, which is called the Export Marketing and Investment Assistance, EMIA in short, managed by one of our sister divisions within the DTI. The scheme develops export markets for South African products and services and recruit new foreign direct investment to the country. Its objective is to provide marketing assistance to develop new export markets and grow existing export markets. It assists with the identification of new export markets through market research. The EMIA scheme program provides the following benefits to enterprises. Individual exhibition participation, like if the president is going to China, the DTI will then organize a pavilion in China where South African companies will go and exhibit their products there. It also supports primary market research and foreign direct investment, and then supports the individual inward missions. Foreign companies who want to visit South Africa to come and invest here, we also support them through this scheme. And then the other program, just to assist women to access markets, we do this by encouraging and supporting the participation of women in the trade missions. Whenever the deputy minister or the minister or even the president goes overseas and they go there with the business people, we have a program that supports women to also participate. And these are the just examples in 2011 and 12 of the mission that has taken place where women participated. India, Russia, Brazil, and recently Zimbabwe. And then between April 2011 and September 2011, 132 women enterprises were supported through the EMIA scheme. Most of the women were from these provinces, Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape. Obviously, the effort now is to spread this thing to other provinces that are normally lagging behind. Chair, we also leverage the capital expenditure program and broader government procurement to stimulate demand and support for women-owned factories in line with the 10 products that I talked about and IPEP sectors. I think really South Africa, the efforts now should be with all this huge capital expenditure for the infrastructure rollout, how do we ensure that women are mainstreamed and participate in supplying, you know, and in developing all this infrastructure that we're going to be developing throughout South Africa? We also respond to the challenges by improving competitiveness of local industries by intensifying awareness campaigns on incentive schemes that the department currently offers. We also participate in addressing growing global protectionism through active participation in multilateral and bilateral trade negotiations, and then ensuring that we engender the trade agreements that we normally negotiate bilaterally and multilaterally. And in conclusion, Chair, looking forward, we have to enhance cooperation with key stakeholders, including women associations, to enhance joint implementation and outreach, intensify our research in the area of women enterprises, gender equality, to gain even more understanding of the opportunities and the challenges presented. And again, you know, mainstreaming and introducing women-owned enterprises in the value chains of big multinationals, and also ensure that we promote the tenor side products and those in the IPEP 2 policy. Coming, focusing within the DTI itself now, in terms of how do we do in terms of employment equity within the DTI, there have been a huge progress, Chair. If we start from 2008 statistics, as you can see there, women in SMS in 2008 were 39%. The target is always 50%. But in 2011, we're about 42% now. And people with disability, I think we are meeting the target. The target is 2%. And yes, in 2011, the Green Party, we are at 2%. And when it comes to the number of employees, if you count the number of employees, the females are always, whether you focus on the Africans, the females are 43%, Asians 2.8, colors 2.7, whites 7.9. So the females are always higher than the males. Thank you very much for listening.
Other departments, because one issue that has been very, very difficult for departments to come up with is disaggregating of information, where we have been getting just a broad information on what they are doing and not actually being able to be specific as to our targeted areas, that is women, children, and persons with disability. And I just wanted on a lighter note to say that, you know, the 2% target is a minimum. So we would really like to see it going, you know, exceeding the 2%, because it's just the minimum, which is very difficult for various departments to achieve. Without wasting any time, let me then afford the opportunity to members. I will note hands from Member Dichitelo, Member Kekana, Member Seke, Member Kiki, Member Lamula, in that order, please. Can we start with you, ma'am?
Thank you very much for this interesting report. You know, when it comes to women, I think each and every woman becomes excited when you mention lots of things that you are trying to help our women with. We'd like to thank you, DGI, for that. But I've got some few questions that I need clarity on. It's like you made mention of helping women. I'd like to know the criteria that you use when you give this women with it. And then the other one is, how do you filter down to the rural areas, to the women in the rural areas? Because my feeling is most of the urbanized people have got the advantage, and then you as DTI, how do you filter down, more especially to a village where there's a traditional leader, and do you have any business women that have been assisted by DTI? And then I, Chair, I've got the last but one, or the last but two, is you talk of progressive women. Do you help a progressive woman to have the second business? Do you prefer to give her the first opportunity, or you start with Mrs. Tadelo, who comes from the village in Motswedi? How do you differentiate between the progressive woman and SDGI? And you mentioned five provinces. I would like to know when are we reaching the next four of the provinces that are not supported? And what causes the delay to mention that? The last question that I would like to have is, your last word was about the disabled, the 2%, which to me it's not enough. I allude what the chair has said. I would like to know, do you have any cooperatives that include disabled people, or do you have a progressive company that has been owned by disabled people? Thank you, Chair.
My question is, if you could expand on the issue of skills that you raised, that you assist women. In fact, when you started, you said women, youth, children and disability. Shall we also allow to include youth in the discussion? Okay. My question now is on when you spoke about assisting women, people with disability and youth to acquire skills for running businesses. In the past, there was a research done by Kula and Inzeka. I'm not sure if you are aware of it, that said that for every 10 businesses that are there, 7 out of 10 collapse after 2 years, especially the SMMEs, which are where people start. And they said that is a general trend, because even in America, a very high percentage of businesses, SMMEs that have started collapse after the initial period. So if businesses are collapsing after 2 years, that is part of the route that you have to take. Now, my question is, do you have research to see what the success story is out of all those businesses that you have started? Are they becoming successful, or do they go through this spell of collapsing before they succeed as a necessary experience, as a necessary experience in business? The second question is on co-ops. You know, we speak about co-ops in South Africa. I know that in Israel, 20% of the economy is public sector, 25% is kibbutzi, which is co-ops, and 45% is private sector. But then they train people on how to run cooperatives. You can have a farm and be successful, whether it's crop or stop farming, but do you also make sure that people understand how a co-op run? A person who joined today, what are his benefits as compared to a person who joined 20 years ago? I mean, their contribution is not the same. So do we steal people with co-ops? Because otherwise, good projects collapse just because, you know, there's no proper policy as to how people are sharing resources. When you start a project, that is fine. But if it is yielding 2 million and, say, 20 women must share that, they could easily start fighting for that 2 million, because once money comes out and you don't have proper techniques to make sure that it is properly shared in terms of income, in terms of, I mean, people are not doing the same thing in the same co-op. Some might be management, some might be lower down, how they share all this. That's not the need. Just the structure, the organogram and everything. I wonder if we're training people, because otherwise our co-ops might not be successful. The last question I wanted to ask, is on the youth, that your department is trade and industry. Industry, and I've raised this before, I'm raising it with you because you are here. I'm happy to have you here. That we hear that in Germany, 60% of the population there do vocational, and that is on-job training. I love this on-job training, because the point is they don't fail because you are trained on the job. You don't sit behind the desk and then it is chalk and talk. Teacher in front giving, bombarded with theory. They said it's like nursing. Women used to say, we don't fail there because you are trained on the job. Things are practical. If they say aspirin, you give it and this person, my patient must swallow it, you can't fail. So in Germany, they say 60% of the population is on job training and their system is successful. Now, in our industry, is industry willing to train our youth, say matriculants, after finishing? I know Mercedes, BMW, that does train, and I've got in my family a few that have completed after 3 years. They're highly qualified technicians after doing this, completing matric and doing on-job training. Now, how is our industry responding to this on-job training? Are we successful there or not? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, officials from DTI. Thank you for the information.
I know that we might want to maybe also ask questions on youth like Danny did, but I think in fairness we had only requested, you know, employment opportunities and skills development for women and persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we can confine ourselves to that.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think it was very good. One question will be, I think I'll align myself with the question. I think it's on, eh? my first question, I think I'll align myself with Honorable Dichidelo with regard to your, if you have awareness campaigns to the rural areas. I think you are aware that majority of women out there, especially in rural areas, are not working. And surely these programs of your department will be able to change the lives of many people out there. So just to make sure that those people are aware of the services that you are rendering. I think I'm coming from a rural province of Mpumalanga, and I think I'll be glad if I can get this information just to change the lives of the people out there. And surely the members also of this portfolio committee are having a different constituency offices. I think we can also utilize the parliamentary constituency office in different provinces just to access women out there. And one other question, Chair, is the issue of the when you were in page 9, when you were talking about the program that are targeting the best schools in previously disadvantaged communities. I think I've got a school that have entered this best entrepreneurial program, and I know that one learner have won, and I think it's last year or that other year in 2010, she went to Brazil. But my problem is that when she has presented a good entrepreneurial idea, and she went to overseas. But what is happening after that? How do we make sure that we practicalize that idea just to change that school or the community in which she is serving? Because now she's there, she's from Brazil, she's happy, but what is it that we do after that? I think basically that is my question, Chair. And the last question is also regards to the people with disabilities. I think the information that we are receiving from people with disabilities says that with regard to the employment, most departments are saying that they have reached the target of 2%. And when we look at their organogram and we look at the posts that those people are filling, we find that majority of those people with disabilities are on an internship program. And the department will come here and present that they've reached this the target of 2%. I just want to check the real situation in the DTI. Is this the 2% permanent employees, or are they on internship program? And if they're on internship program, do you have any plans to accommodate them as part of your permanent employees within your department? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. And I want to thank the department as well. Thank you very much. Chairperson, my first comment is that I'm sure as a portfolio committee we have been looking forward to have this kind of engagement here with the department, but the time is too limited. I think we should only have one department today to discuss this thing, because even labor, I'm sure we have serious concern with it as well. The department, I want to say to the department is that the engagement that is going to take place this morning, they should not take it in a negative form. They should take it in a positive form, because we also want to, I'm sure you also want to change here and there. And these will be the advices. Don't take us negative on what we are going to say. Firstly, the department is quiet on disabled persons. The report is quiet on disabled persons. There is nothing that is said about the disabled persons except for the EEE target. That's all you said about the disabled person. And the Chair, if the disabled person does not even have an acting director on the disabled unit, that means they are not taking the disabled seriously in the department, because I don't know how do they reach out to the disabled person if they don't have that particular unit. So, I mean, this leaves us with a serious concern. And to add on what Honorable Zeke said on the issue of the EEE targets, it is important when you give us that particular report, at least to know which levels are the which levels are the women and which levels are the mentally disabled person. Because we might say, yes, you have improved your 42%. Maybe they are at the lowest level, that 42%. So it's very important that when you write the report, you reflect on what level are those particular people. And also, Chair, the involvement with the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities. Now, the report is not quite clear because I only heard about the 100. I don't know whether is that the only way that they are involved with the department, because I think even the department solely depends on this particular department. What other engagement and what other involvement? What is the working relationship? It's not quite clear with the department. Sorry, without taking much of your time. And if you can elaborate more on the Isivande, the Women's Fund, we are more interested in that. And what is the EMIA scheme? I think that is all so far. EMIA.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation, sir. My first question is, we need to know what the progress of this department is. And as I understood, our line departments need to submit reports to our department on the progress achieved. My question then is, are reports on progress set submitted to our department on a regular basis, on a three-monthly basis? Is this done? If not, can you elaborate on that one? And then my other two questions were covered on rural women and the criteria being used for these rural women. And I'm very concerned about it because rural women are always excluded. It's easier and it's less trouble when you work in the urban and city areas. What about our rural women? Are they really covered in your programs? And then you did not speak on the challenges facing your department with your projects. I would like to know what your challenges are surrounding your projects on empowering women, especially those in the rural areas, as I said. And then my next question is I've worked on my old presentation that was sent out prior to yours now. It is on your strategic framework on gender and women economic empowerment. Is any time frame set for the updating strategic framework on gender and women economic empowerment? You said you are updating. The next question is, and I'll be very short, Chair, on your Isivande Women's Fund. I want to know who can apply, what is the criteria, and how long does the process take? And then on your Bavumile project, you said they move from province to province and they give training for 1 week. Is training for 1 week sufficient for these women? It is an extremely short period of time to really do justice to any project where funding is involved to get these women up to standard. Is a proper study of the market of these projects that they are doing or making or need to do done? And it is extremely important because they need to sell these projects. And if they do projects or if they do articles or that does not have a market, it is also funding down the drain. And I would like to know, is a proper study done of the market? And then municipalities, I never heard of any training in my municipality, and I'm from a rural area too. I'm from a rural area, so I'd like to know which municipalities are targeted. And then on this telemedicine story, I'd like you to elaborate a little bit more. I would like to know, is this lady or is this the women involved here, are they health professionals? I'd like just to elaborate more on this because there are some issues that are clear for me on that one. And then I also feel that I hear very little of disabled persons. I hear very little of them. How are they accommodated in your programs? How are they accommodated of your programs? Especially in this one that you have on is it now garments that you being that will be done in co with clothing with China. Disabled people can work on industrial machines, and I had a project like that, and it worked excellently. I'd like to know what your inputs are there. And then, what is the other one? There's another one, the last question. Your success is achieved. Thank you, Chief. Successes achieved with your projects. You can just go province by province and just give us some feedback on that. You need to, if you've laid out money, you need to know what you have achieved and if it was worthwhile. And because if you put money in the bank, you want interest on that money. So if the department has any funding laid out, they need to at least have some interest back on their money. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. As you respond to that basket full of questions, can you also just as to share with us as to what type of program have you put aside to ensure that, I know that one of my colleagues spoke to cooperatives. We have been having cooperatives, and they all, you know, they die. So this time around, how are you going to ensure that they are sustainable? And then, as this portfolio committee, our role, as you know, that is that of oversight. I think it's crucial for when we get information that will enable this committee to exercise oversight. We go there physically. As one of the members said, we also have constituency offices. So it is very helpful to know where these are located so that we can practically, you know, be able to exercise our oversight. I've got this interesting question about women who are selling on the pavement. Are we also of the view that these women will continue selling throughout their lives? Is there a way of graduating them and so that we can stop calling them survivalists? Do you have that type of a program? Thank you. Okay. Then I'll give over to you to respond.
On my page 17, you have this 100 girls for job shadowing for a period of 3 years. Do I understand correctly that these 100 girls are already in this position of job shadowing for 3 years? If so, I want to congratulate you. Because nowadays, you know, when people do apply, it is always what are your experience on what you are doing. And I really want to congratulate the department. If this is already happening, this is a brilliant idea. And I would suggest you do this to more girls, and especially the disabled girls or women involved. We in the Western Cape has already started with this. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think in addition to the cooperatives that you're highlighting, you know, we've got this new program called your Comprehensive Rural Development Program. Most departments are part of that program, and it has been implemented in most rural areas in our provinces. What is the role of the DTI there? Because I think most of the departments are provincially based, and the communities out there are encouraged to form these cooperatives. But rest assured, they are not moving at all. What is the role of DTI in that program? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I don't want to sing praise to the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry. I need to say Deputy Minister Tabete, because the problem is that what you tell the department, the information members, they don't have information, because Deputy Minister Tabete got a passion, you know, to work with women, right, maybe to filter down, especially to our constituency offices, to rural areas. We don't have information, because Mina, I want to call the Deputy Minister in my area to come and address women, you know. There's no follow-up, because women, they were there with their programs, with their with their business plans, and we give it to the department. After that, it's quiet, and they keep on coming to the office and come and ask, now what is happening? Please, there must be a follow-up after maybe a Deputy Minister address, you know, women in our areas, you know, because really I know that, that's why I say I don't want to sing praise, because I know that she got the passion to work, especially on the ground. But the information, like the women from rural areas, like Member Dichitelo and Member Teke, they are from rural areas, but they don't know that information, that they can call the Deputy Minister to come and address women right in the rural areas. Can you please make sure that maybe we, everybody, get the information that anytime, anywhere, the president, the Deputy Minister is coming. And other thing, I just want to hear something, that there are many places that the disabled people are working, like SHARP, like, you know, in Gauteng, there are so many centers that disabled people are working. There's any problem that as DTI, you can go to those places, maybe, and try to get those things that they are doing, and maybe to get that they must get the place that they can sell their stuff, because really they are really struggling, and maybe you can train, they can get more training from your department. That was my contribution. Thank you, Chairperson.
Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think just some of these are questions, but we will treat them as an advice from the committee. But we'll try our best to answer as many as we could. I think first, I just want to concede that within the department, you see, when it comes to transformation programs that we have a dedicated unit that looks after the women and economic emancipation. This is the unit. We also have a directorate that looks after the youth economic emancipation. Unfortunately, they are not here today. And these guys, they work very closely with the National Youth Development Agency and the National Youth Council at the moment to formulate the strategy for emancipation of our youth. So I think with time we'll have, with you, Chair, allowing, we'll have to come here and present the strategy. Because in any way, the intention of the department is to take the strategy to cabinet, so that it will be a government-wide strategy. Everybody will be working towards that. So I'm sure we will get an opportunity to come and present to this committee on the strategy. But what I wanted to say is that, yes, we don't have a directorate or a business unit that looks after the disabled people in terms of economic emancipation. There I have to be honest and be upfront. But although within the varied programs within the DTI, the disabled people, they do benefit. The thing is, when it comes to disabled people, really, we haven't, you know, desegregated the information so that we know exactly that how many disabled people are benefiting from the incentives of the DTI and also from the programs that are managed by the organization of DTI, like the National Empowerment Fund, you know, that benefits disabled people. They do benefit from those programs, but really we don't have statistics in terms of numbers now that we can provide here. Chair, when it comes to the co-ops, yes, as the honourable members will know, in the past, during apartheid, the focus of government was mainly on agriculture and the financial services in terms of assisting co-ops. That is why today you have huge banks like ABSA, who came from the cooperative movement. You also have KWV and the likes, who came from you know, agricultural co-ops, which were heavily supported by the apartheid government. But the current government, you know, and you know better, is targeting co-ops as the form of alleviating poverty and the issues of regional disparities, you know, and job creation. But our people, really, they don't know and understand, you know, the principle of cooperating and forming co-ops. I think one honourable member here, I think it was Honourable Kekani, mentioned that the cooperative people, they form a co-op, they apply for funding from government, they get it. Immediately they get the money, they start fighting amongst themselves. Yes. And you'll find that the powerful member within the co-op, he is the one who will take all the resources that the government is providing. So to deal with this issue, what is the Department of Trade is doing? Chair, we are amending the co-ops legislation at the moment. Because with the co-ops legislation, we want the legislation to give us the authority to establish the co-ops agency. An agency like CEDA. Although maybe it won't be as big and with all the tentacles like CEDA, but to deal with the issue of the infrastructure, we will be piggybacking on the infrastructure of CEDA. So within CEDA, we want to put the co-ops agents, which will be providing the financial and non-financial support to cooperatives throughout the country. As you all know, CEDA, they have established branches all over South Africa in all provinces. They have about 48 branches. They have mobile units that covers even the most rural of areas. So we want to use that infrastructure also to assess the co-ops. So the agents will be providing the financial and non-financial support to co-ops. But then another infrastructure that's going to be established as a result of the new act will be the tribunal, the cooperative tribunal, to deal with the issues of infighting. If people think that they have been cheated within the co-ops, they can approach the tribunal to deal with the issues of infighting and the actual governance of the cooperatives. The act, although the Department of Higher Education and Training stopped us, they will be doing that, but we're going to be establishing the Cooperatives Academy. The Department of Higher Education, because it's their political mandate to establish academies in South Africa, or educational academies, they are the ones who's going to amend their act so that they could establish
a cooperatives academy. The cooperatives academy will be providing training and issuing certificates up to a master's degree, a 1 month or 3 month certificate up to a full master's degree on cooperatives. So, and we're going to be using the FETs and universities to provide such a program. But the academy itself will be designing the curricula and everything for FETs to provide such educational programs. And we're going to establish an advisory council which will be advising our minister, you know, on the issues of policy and the issues of challenges that the corporates are facing, you know, in the regions. So as soon as the act is, you know, is approved by Parliament, then we'll have a chance to establish all these institutional frameworks that we are talking about. That will be assisting cooperatives. Obviously, as we all know, many of our cooperatives are still in the informal sector. It will also assist the informal sector to develop. But coming to the informal sector now, within the Department of Trade and Industry, we just established a unit, a chair, that will just focus on the informal sector. All along, we had the chief directorate focusing on SMMEs. But we have realized that the informal sector, they don't benefit much from the programs of government, because obviously, I think the problem is two-pronged. You find that the informal sector itself, because of the issues of when they are formal, they'll be paying taxes and all these things, they would rather stay being informal. But by staying being informal, you know, and not paying taxes and all other things, and not being registered, you are unable to access the incentives of government and other programs that government is supporting. But we have learned a lot from countries like India, you know, about 90% of the economy there is informal, but although they are formal business, but they are in the informal area. So we will be designing the informal sector strategy just to assist these guys, not to force them to become formal, but to assist them, you know, with simple things like the infrastructure in the cities, in the towns, the stores where they can, in a decent way, go and exhibit their products, with the hope that with time they will then formalize so that they can assess all other incentives of government. When it comes to how DTI, you know, I think this question has been asked by many honorable members, you know, how the programs of DTI, you know, are accessed by the people in the rural areas, what do we do to ensure that people also know about our programs. We have an initiative, this time around is led by the two deputy ministers, which is called Taking the DTI to the People. You know, every month they take all the divisions of DTI and all the organizations that report to the DTI, they go to the rural areas. There are imbizos that are organized there, and each and every division of DTI presents on its programs and how they could access and provide all sorts of documents, like these are the incentives of the Department of Trade and Industry, and also of documents related to all the programs that we do. So the deputy ministers, they lead this, the so-called Taking the DTI to the people, just to promote the programs that we provide. Ntombi will take the one on the progressive women, whether we also support their second businesses and all those things. And yes, the provinces, there are those usual suspects, which will be the Western Cape, KZN, and Gauteng. Well, the effort is always to try to spread to all the provinces. There are challenges in any way, you know, because some of the provinces are so rural that our people, because of the history and everything, you know, They don't even know how to access DTI. You know, we the ministers, the deputy ministers go there to present, but you find that there's still a challenge in terms of now how do they design even the so-called business plan that will be required by the incentives of DTI for you to access the incentives. Corps for disabled people, well, again, thanks. As I've said, they still have problem of not disaggregating the information down enough to be able to say we have so many disabled people who are in cooperatives, we have so many disabled people who are benefiting from the incentives of the DTI. I think this could be a suggestion to us to put an effort on this area. The low survival rate, I think it's still a very big problem. But you see, I think the issue of the low survival rate of enterprises, we as government, we also contribute to that. Cabinet approved the so-called 30-day payment cycle that we as government, we must try to pay for the services and products that we procure from SMMEs within 30 days. But government is not doing that. There are many government departments and municipalities, even provincial government departments, that are not playing ball at all. So much so that he can tell you he's leading that effort now. The DG of the Department of Trade Industry will be writing to all the DGs and to all the heads of departments in the provinces and municipalities, you know, reminding them about this important, you know, decision that was taken by cabinet that within 30 days, you see, in other countries like South Korea, within 15 days, then you have a problem if you are a cinema and you don't pay within 15 days. So what we are suggesting is that maybe in the, this must form part of the performance agreement of the DDs, of the DGs and the heads of departments. It must form performance agreement. So that there is something that, you know, when they assess the performance of the department, you know, if it doesn't pay on time, then there must be an action taken. We are also suggesting a chair, although I'm not sure whether our minister will be brave enough to do this, but we are suggesting that, you know, from time to time we assess the performance and the department. And the departments that are not performing, you know, to be named and shamed through some kind of a publication to the public. Yeah. Yeah, but it will depend on the authority minister will agree to this one. But I think we all have to, to put a shoulder behind the wheel in terms of ensuring that government is paying on time and is complying with this 30-day payment cycle story. On the skills development, you know, one of the programs that we are upscaling within the DTI is incubation program, because really that's why you create sustainable small enterprises through incubation, you know, to deal with the issue again of the low survival rate. So at the moment, the incubation program is run by CEDA. They have about 31 incubators, and that's too small. What we are doing is that the DTI itself now, the DTI proper, not just CEDA, will also upscale the incubation program within the DTI. We have put aside something like 300 million just to support and establish more incubators in partnership with big industry and the universities and FETs. You know, so that we train our people, we train the co-ops, and we incubate them for a period of time, and then when they are they have gained enough skills and experience, then they leave the incubation. More people come in from the other end. Youth on job training. Oh, you see, over and above the job training thing, The DTI also have a program called the Workplace Challenge, where we are partnering with private sector, and we are sponsoring. In fact, while it's some kind of the popular job subsidy, but it's not under that program of the job subsidy. It's something that the DTI started a long time ago, where we are partnering with private sector, and we are subsidizing. It's more of a stipend that we give to young people who will be employed under this workplace challenge by the private sector for 2 or 3 years, just for them to gain experience. I think in this current financial year, we'll have about 200 youth employed by companies being given stipends by the DTI. I think the stipend we give can run up to 4,000, depending on the level of the student and the qualification he has attained educationally. Well, from Honorable Grace, the awareness campaign, that's through the taking DTI to the people, taking DTI to the people. And what happens after winning the technical competition? I think that it is a weakness of the program at the moment, because yes, the girls participate in the technical competition. They design wonderful business ideas. They win. They are given awards for winning. But after that, yes, I think it has been a bit of a weakness that we don't make a follow-up whether those ideas, come into fruition in terms of being the businesses. But I don't know whether Ntombi would want to add one or two words on that one. And the employment equity within the DTI, whether the disabled people are just interns or not. No, the 2% we are talking about permanently employed people within the DTI. Yes, we got the word that the 2% is not enough, but these are permanently employed people. And the comprehensive rural development program, yes, we are working together with the rural development. You see, right now I think we have about 40 programs in the rural areas supported by the DTI, working closely with the Department of Rural Development, where through the so-called Regional Industrial Development Strategy, we have a fund that is not that big, and the IDC is managing it on our behalf. Our people, they go to the provinces, they go to the rural areas. Mainly, they work with the co-ops, and it's outside of the cooperative incentive scheme. This is another scheme now, where we work with municipalities and co-ops, and maybe buy tractors and equipment for people to do farming and all those things. I think we have about 40 programs now, directly supported by the DTI. But on top of that, we want to expand this regional industrial development strategy now. And that is why you'll hear with time we are coming up with the special economic zone program. You know, in the past, as you all know, we had the IDZ program, and the IDZ program, the weakness of that program is that for you as a province to have an IDZ, you must have a seaport or an international airport. And some provinces, they don't, because of the geographical location, they don't have the seaport, and then they don't have like a big international airport to do like big volumes in terms of trade. So hence then the reason to come up with these so-called special economic zones, because the special economic zones, you don't need any seaport. As long as you can show that the area you want to develop as a special economic zone, it has links with the other important industrial regions within South Africa, then the DTI will designate that area as a special economic zone. And there will be a lot of incentives just designed for companies that will be relocating into the special economic zone. So that will be under the umbrella, broader umbrella called the Regional Industrial Development Strategy that we are designing now. And the special economic zone bill will be taken to Parliament very soon, from my understanding. And yes, we are not doing reporting to the department. And I think we have to look at that, Ntombi. Maybe on a quarterly basis, we submit a report share on how we perform on women, people with disabilities, and youth. I don't think there's any report that directly goes there. I don't know whether you want
to. We do the annual contribution to the UN report that the department, of Women has to submit on a country report. But we have not have established patterns, but we are represented in the gender machinery, which means we participate in the policy development. I think right now is the rural development strategy that they're working on, so we sit on that panel.
And the further collaboration with the department, the DGs of both departments, we agree that there will be programs where we as the DTI will be participating in. And one of the programs, if I remember, is called the Sheltered Employment Program. That is run by the Department of Labor at the moment, I think. The idea there is using the Bafumile, the one I was presenting here for skills development, using the Bafumile one, we will be training disabled people in the provinces under that program of Bafumile. At the moment, I understand that the Department of Labor is running with that program. I don't know whether the colleagues will be presenting on it. But yes, in the meeting we had with the DG of the Department of Women a month ago, we agreed that we're going to be participating on that one, and also the cooperatives one. I don't know whether we want to comment on that one. I think, Ntombi, maybe you can talk on the challenges of on empowering women and the time frame on the strategy. The time frame, when are we going to have an approved strategy? And the 1 week of women training, is it enough? Maybe you can quickly comment on this. Yeah.
Thank you. I think maybe just to begin on the technical question that the DDG has responded to, the component that maybe we left out is that the girls are expected to create an innovative, technology innovative idea. And after that, and so it will be a new design. And the aim was that this is then registered as a new invention from the girls and given support through CEDA to actually register it and start a business for the winning school, which is 10 girls. But we're making inroads again to link it with the DTI bursary program to say the 10 girls that actually win are taken under the wing of the DTI and given bursary so that we monitor their progress and they can actually become something in life. The school that presented were in the Free State last month with the Deputy Minister. One of the inventions was a belt, especially for disabled people, that will vibrate when a car is coming and can detect within 20 meters of that. Another one was a hairdryer that uses solar system. So they come up with wonderful ideas, and we have brought partners like CLC and a number of companies because we want the project to be sustainable so that we can track where the girls go, where they become, because it's a pool of engineers in the future that we can use. And so it can be linked as well to the job shadowing program. So we note the concern, and we're hoping to do a lot more on it. The strategic framework on gender and women empowerment has been a long and elaborative process because the Deputy Minister wanted to ensure that every woman representative structure is consulted on it and that it covered all the areas that could, unpack the challenges that women face when they're doing business. We're at the final stage, if I may say so. And then we're hoping that by the end of June,
it should be with the minister in terms of as a cabinet memo to be taken to cabinet. So from our side, that process would then have been concluded. We have been working with the Department of Women, Children and People with Disability to make sure that all the areas that they have raised are also covered in the strategy. In terms of the TRIB winner, the telemedicine, but before I go to telemedicine, it's just to highlight the program creates awareness on how technology can be used to grow a business, because there is a women are at a diverse range in terms of economic empowerment. A number of them are at a startup, and we have found they remain there forever, starting up and not growing. So our program has to cater for those that are starting, for those that are growing, and for those that are at a very high level. Last week I met with a group of women who their turnover is about 8 million a year, and they're saying it's cold up there. All your programs are focusing on women that are starting, and we are left with no support, which the challenges are bigger than what the department could, because we think they have made it, and so they're up there. So TRIP tries to address across the range. So it has a number of categories of women and supporting each other. The 2010 winner of the TRIP award is a woman that is running a coffin factory in Bulwa. She doesn't have water in her business. Her turnover is about 1 million. I went to see her business. She makes coffins. She's got a mortuary. And she's got a bottle store. She runs an empire in one space, but she doesn't have water. So through the program, we give an award of about 700,000 of technology. So she's going to get a borehole. She's going to get a new fridge, a cold room. She's going to get furniture, technology for making her. She makes coffin, and she's got a pile of them. And she says, well, I don't have enough demand for coffin. So she's turned into making furniture and sells to the public. So that is from there, we then move to a very high-level woman who then supplies this technology to hospitals. She invented the technology, and the government paid her an inventor's fee. But what our award has done for her, it has enabled her to start a whole new site in KZN, whereby she sets up this technology and can get a specialist in China to diagnose a child in Mutu. With that, and this has minimized the cost from the government of Limpopo of traveling patient back and forth for something that can be cured by something that can be gotten from a chemist. So this is an invention that supports, and I just wanted to show you that from a very rural to a very high level. But in between, you have women that when you ask, how do you use technology in your business? And they said, which technology? The phone. You know. So there is an education which the program then tries to do. So we do road shows throughout the provinces going to business women, whether it's breakfast, it's lunch, it's dinner. What businesses, what technology do you need for your business? And DTI has now established a program with a network facilitator. I just sent to one woman where they have a list of consultants. You just phone the consultant next to you who will come and assess your business and tell you which products of DTI you can apply for and assist you through the application process until you receive a grant. So we're starting to use this process to make sure that women know about the products that are available and can have access. The DDG will speak on Isivande and where we are. And I think he's spoken on the women on the pavement. I think I'm left with challenges. Bavumile, 1 week is not enough. I think last year I said we made an application to the Department of Labor, the National Skills Fund, to expand.
If you can quickly round up, because yes. We're only left with about 15 minutes.
Okay. The new proposal is to increase the number of women that are trained on Bavumile to about 500 to 1,000.
to be able to access the program. So we're moving from, and it is not 1 week. 1 week is the actual technical aspect of the program, and the second week is the CEDA, which is the bookkeeping and how to manage a business. So it's 2 weeks. But even that is not enough. So we are moving towards 3 to 4 weeks at intervals to be able to accommodate all aspects. And then we have an aftercare program, which is up to 3 months. But we have to put in place a mentoring program to make sure that they make it in the business with the skills that they have acquired. So that is in the pipeline. These women are selected by municipalities. Our entry points into any province is the Department of Economic Development. And then we have meetings with municipal development managers who then take us to communities. We start with awareness raising, and they do the actual selection. So we just give the criteria in terms of what needs to be done. The challenges are capacity and money. The need is big. The resources are minimal. But we continue to do with what we have, what we can. Thank you.
I think quickly, Chair, on the Isivande. Like I said, really, Isivande was meant for women in rural areas, in peri-urban areas, at the entry level. That's why, you know, even the loan itself is from 30,000 to about 2 million. And obviously now I'm hanging the dirty linen of the GTI, you know, on the line. yeah, you know, originally what happened, we had just a one-page criteria of how we qualify. Yes, we have to be a registered company, you know, it has to be owned by women. I think 50% was the minimum percentage ownership. It was a very simplistic criteria, one page. But then the mistake we did was to take the program to the IDC. As you know, IDC, you know, it just caters for, you know, the high end of the market. And the IDC, they just look at our criteria and say, oh, no, DPI doesn't know what they are doing. This money will go down the drain if we use this criteria. And they applied their normal IDC, you know, criteria. And then you find that there was just no application passed their criteria. After some time, we realized with the complaints from the women that because we have a problem at the IDC. And then IDC decided to employ an outside person just to manage this thing. They were going to monitor him or her. They employed a fund manager. You see, a fund manager is even worse than the IDC. Because a fund manager is a person who says, give me your money, I'll manage it on your behalf, I'll invest it, and ensure that you get the return. And that's how they approached the, you know, the whole fund. The criteria was even stricter than the IDC one. But then we changed everything. Yeah, we changed everything, yeah, because we saw that there's so many complaints from women. Because we'll find that even women who won contracts from government, you know, after winning a contract, we're supposed to be getting easy money from government because, you know, the business is there now. But they couldn't get funding from this event. But I think that we have sorted out the problem. I think right now the fund is doing very well from what we hear, and we just hope that the fund manager is telling the truth. There will be a meeting very soon just to assess the performance. The EMIA scheme, just assists women. The EMIA scheme just assist women if they want to go and exhibit their products overseas. So we support them, you know, by buying the ticket, the accommodation overseas, and the exhibition stand, where they will be exhibiting overseas. DTI provides funding for that. We also provide funding for people from overseas if they want to come and exhibit here so that they invest here in South Africa. Not a guy who just wants to send products, but only the guys who want to invest. and create jobs here in South Africa. Roughly, that's how the MEF scheme works. Chair, on the other questions, I've noted that we will come back in the form of a report, like on the successes achieved and all those things. I think we just have to go back and get our statistics together. We can then provide you with the report.
Would really appreciate that. Yes. It's unfortunate because we can't engage you more since we have a Department of Labor also waiting, to. So our time is actually restricting us. But as for, women's empowerment and gender equity, we would really like to stress that we should really take this seriously. We should really take this seriously because at a certain point in time, we will have to ask the minister herself in the house where we feel that it's not enough. So we'll really appreciate then that report that you are going to be writing to us. We know that with regards to budget is never enough. But let us have people who are passionate about what they are doing. Like one of the colleagues said, do you have a unit, that with a person who's disabled? Because that person, she or he, will be passionate. Because he knows what it means. I'm not even surprised when you tell us that IDC, just look at the one page. That's how women are viewed. They're not taken seriously. Despite repeated, statements being made, but it's not moving anywhere. But we hope that with these various departments that have now started looking into these issues, they will now start to take us seriously because we will pose questions on what we want to see happening. Without wasting any time, thank you very much. You can stay, you can leave, but we really thank you for the information. This is just the beginning. Yeah, we will continue engaging with you. Thank you very much. Members, maybe you just want to take a 5 minutes break before we continue with labor.
I'll think about it, and I'll let you know what it is. Okay, member. Honourable members, can we start? I know it's going to be a long day, but I'm sure if we conduct ourselves in the manner defeated, we'll be able to be through on time without wasting any time. Let me start by introducing ourselves. My name is Dorothy Ramudibe, chairperson of this committee. And then I will ask Denis.
My name is Denis Kingala. I'm member ASC of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Dumelang. My name is Grace Tseke, the member of this Portfolio Committee.
My name is
Susana
Morning, member of the committee.
Sanbonani, Mundu Mumala, member of the committee. Moleni, it's a man of the phonic DMU, member of the committee.
Morning, I'm Sierra Porter, member of this committee.
Good morning, I'm Marika Kremen from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
My name is Virgil Seafield from the Department of Labor.
Tobile Lamati, Department of Labor.
From the department, can you give us your designation, please, as well?
My name is Virgil Seafield. I'm Chief Director, Advocacy, Statutory Advocacy Services, Department of Labor.
My name is Toby Lelamati. I'm the Acting Deputy Director, General Inspection and Enforcement Services.
My name is Snubko Ndwango, from the Department of Labor, responsible for one of its entities, Shelter Deployment Factors, as the CEO.
Good morning. My name is Rusimati Chauke. I'm the Chief Director responsible for Human Resource Management.
Good morning. My name is Peggy Kama, Director of Human Resources in the Department of Labor.
My name is Musa Zondi. I speak for the Minister of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Lerato Molivazi. I am the Deputy Director General responsible for Corporate Services.
Good morning. My name is Esther Tuwani. I am the Chief Director in Public Employment Services.
My name is Nuresh Singh, Deputy Director, Employment Equity Policy Development.
Again, Titus Mtsweni, Acting Director, Employment Standards, responsible for child labor.
Morning, my name is
Nelson Omatana,
I'm the
Judema Foko from Office of the Deputy Minister of Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, I'm Kashfa Abrams, the Research Chair of the Committee.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm Ibusen Silia Ditsetelo, a member of this committee. And comes from, I come from the Northwest Province.
This is normal, sir. Secretary to Chairperson. Yeah.
Good morning, I'm Kuni Musimani, a member of this committee. I'm from Gauteng Province, thank you.
Oh, good morning, everybody. I'm Helen Namula from the Western Cape, member of this committee.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable member, another one more neighbor.
Yes. Does someone have? Yes. Can you introduce yourself first?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dixon Tinikaya Mkono, Department of Labor.
Thank you very much. Now that we have all introduced ourselves, we will all feel comfortable, you know, when we speak, because we normally are not comfortable when we don't know who we are speaking to. Once again, let me welcome you all and say that the purpose of our meeting here is to hear from you on the opportunities, employment, skills development for women, children, and persons with disabilities. And you are all welcome, and we really appreciate that you honored our invitation. Thank you. Without wasting any more time, I will then hand over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members, for the opportunity to come and present to you. As I said earlier, my name is Lerato Molebazi. I am the Deputy Director General responsible for corporate services. With me is a formidable team from the department who will take questions. Will take questions in the different areas that we represent within the organization. So just in terms of the issues that we are going to address this morning, we will give a bit of background in terms of the issues that we are here about. Programs benefiting women and persons with disabilities, both within and outside of the organization. Budgetary allocations for our programs. We will also talk to the collaborations that we have as a department with other entities, and we will talk about the empowerment of women and persons with disabilities both within and outside of the organization, policy provisions, child labor initiatives that we have, capacity building, and the challenges that we face, and we will also talk to the future plans. Just by way of introduction, we will have an inward-looking focus, and we'll also have an outward-looking focus. Within the Department of Labor, we have two entities, in fact, three entities that look outwardly. The one is Sheltered Employment Factories, which colleagues from the Department of Trade and Industry spoke about earlier on. We also have Public Employment Services, which assists in terms of subsidies to organs of non-organizational non-profit organizations that deal with the placement of people with disabilities, and of course we also have our own policy unit that deals with policy for employment equity, child labour, etc. Then, of course, we have our own programs internally, which speak to employment equity, and also which speak to policies, our internal policies for people living with, for people with disability, and around issues of child labor. And so we will deal with the following programs this morning: Sheltered Employment Factories, our own subsidy scheme, which is piloted by the Public Employment Services. We
we use acronyms, as you know. So you will please pardon me, I will try by all means not to use them. Public Employment Services, and the subsidy scheme that they deal with at the moment is DEF-SA, the South African National Council of the Blind, and the National Council of People with Physical Disabilities of South Africa, the CLPA, which is the Child Labour Programme of Action, which was an initiative that the department came into through the ILO, our International Labour Organization. Then, of course, we will deal with issues around the legislative framework in terms of employment equity, the basic conditions of employment, children in the performing arts, and our policy initiatives through our Public Employment Services Bill. Just by way of history, the Sheltered Employment Factories, as they are popularly known as SEF, were established more than 65 years ago. And this was to provide employment for people with disabilities who were unable to hold down employment in the open labor market. Of course, this was due to the nature of their affliction. And at the moment, about 97% of these workers in our factories fit this profile. The sheltered employment factories have 12 factories nationally. However, we do not have factories in the provinces of Mpumalanga and Limpopo. The factories that we have are located in all the other provinces, but in the towns of Bloemfontein, Cape Town, Durban, London, Johannesburg, Kimberley, Pietermaritzburg, Port Elizabeth, Potchefstroom, and Pretoria. These factories collectively employ about 1,050 people living with disabilities, and they're supported by about 120 people on the administration side who deal with the management and technical issues for the factory. With current premises of land, buildings, and equipment, there's a potential to provide up to 3,000 people with disabilities to provide them with gainful employment. These sheltered employment factories, as you can see, have been around for more than 65 years. And these date back to, obviously, they predate democracy and were set up in the apartheid era. Now, part of the challenge that we sit with is that we have provided employment, there's provision for employment to people with disabilities. But the tendency is that you will find that there are more white people in these factories than there are black people. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the numbers of factories that we have not really grown that much for a variety of reasons. One is that there has not been sufficient money really put into sheltered employment factories to make these factories viable. And the second issue is that the sheltered employment factories, for example, create furniture which is sold to government departments, which is sold to the public. In fact, sheltered employment factories now provide furniture for Weatherly's and some other furniture, very well-known high-end furniture stores. We now have a contract in the Eastern Cape with about, I think, 4,000 schools to provide desks for those schools. We would... 4,000. We would like that we have more orders coming through, especially from government, in order to make the sheltered employment factories a viable business entity. We also need to improve the kind of... We currently have a business model. We've just adopted a new business model to ensure that we become competitive both in terms of pricing, but also in terms of turnaround. You will appreciate that because a lot of the people that are making this furniture have got to work in a particular way and are used to working in a particular way, it does the issue around turnaround becomes a bit of an issue. But with support from government entities procuring from sheltered employment factories, I think that we will see a turnaround in terms of the viability of sheltered employment factories. Our vision is to establish a national network of factories and factory outlets that contribute to the economic empowerment of people with disabilities. And this includes ex-combatants and that support metropolitan, rural, and local community organizations and enterprises, where disabled people are to contribute to and be integrated into the nation's economy.
Chair, are we not working from the presentation that we received?
I beg your pardon. We have changed some of the presentation. Some of the slides. The slides remain. Excuse me. The slides do remain the same. However, there are some slides that we have taken off because it's a repeat of the same thing. So if you'll excuse that, chapter. Some of it is not in the presentations that we send to you. All the information that I'm presenting is in the slides, in the presentations that were given to you. What might have changed will be the order and the numbers. Okay. We'll use the heading. My apologies. And can I also just correct something, please? When I was saying the sheltered employment factories are providing desks to schools in the Eastern Cape, it's 490 schools in the Eastern Cape. Not 4,000. 490 schools. Okay. So in the I'm just trying to see if this is going to be possible. If it is at all possible, are you able to follow the presentation on? On the screen.
Through your chair. There's a very important slide now missing. I don't know if it's still coming up. It's the placement of employment opportunities during 2010 financial year according to disabled persons.
It is coming.
Is it coming?
Yes. Okay. I changed the order around. I beg your pardon. So if you're able to follow the presentation from the screen and from what I'm saying, and if you do have any questions on the ones that have been handed to you, I will gladly take questions from those.
You know, also, I think the problem is because they are getting this presentation here. We're supposed to get presentation higher than this so that we can see what it was. That is why there's a lot of confusion sometimes. In future, it doesn't matter the presentation in time. I was just wondering if this is the first report of this committee, of this department to the committee.
Yes, it is.
I just want to find out from members because I can't really, you know, and think for members as to whether they think they'll be able to follow this. I think I'm going to find it very difficult for
you. Chairperson, can I suggest that
can you wait, ma'am?
taken away. I was still speaking.
I beg your pardon.
And I'm saying that I think I'm going to find it difficult, and I think that someone there would like to, my colleague who wants to speak, Honorable Tekana.
Not our infrastructure, because this issue of preservation is a generic problem. In many communities, we hammer this. Presentation are not available in good time, all the time. I'm sure other members have experienced it in other portfolios. So I was going to suggest, rather than consume all the time debating about paging and chronology, why don't we just cope in the worst situation and just listen to the presentation? Those that can follow and manage the paging, that's fine, but let's just listen to the presentation so that at least we come out of this meeting after we have gained something and we can engage, and just warn very strongly that next time when they come, they must get their story correct as far as presentation and paging is concerned. Otherwise, this might go for 3 hours, just debating pages and presentations.
By the way, we are not the same. You are someone who absorbs everything without having to repent. Now,
you must absorb.
You're very right. You know, this is just another point proven to us that women, the issues on women and disabled persons are not taken seriously. See the entourage of the department, 11, 12 people coming down, not having the proper documentation to us in time. And you're very right, Chairperson. We need to follow, because we all have questions and we need clarity on those questions. And this department must take our issues serious too. They ought to know that if they present to their portfolio committee, they need to have their documentation in order. Why not have it in order and in time for us to? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, can we then allow the department to proceed? But I think they will take note of the concerns raised by the committee. Can we allow them to proceed? You are silent, members. Are you silent on giving the department the go ahead to present? Because I don't think we have a choice now.
Yeah.
With a strong warning to say, really, in future this should be avoided.
Yeah. Otherwise, we're wasting all the traveling costs of this department for the day. We cannot afford this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Shall I just then, for ease of reference, use the presentation that was given to you instead of using this one? Slide 5 talks to the placement in employment opportunities during the 2010-2011 financial provincial statements according to people with disability. It's the first slide. During the financial year 2010-11, we placed in all the provinces, a total of 961 persons with disabilities. So, for example, in Gauteng, we placed 240 people who are visually impaired. In Limpopo, we placed 126 people. In KwaZulu-Natal, we placed 154 people, and in the Western Cape, 178 people. And so, in total, 672 people who are visually impaired were placed. Of the hearing impaired, we placed 182, but here, these were placed in two provinces, in Gauteng, 177, and 11 in KwaZulu-Natal. And 101 people with physical disabilities were placed, 26 in Gauteng, 28 in the Eastern Cape, 41 in the Free State, and 6 in Mpumalanga. So Gauteng province placed the most work seekers with disabilities in employment opportunities. So of the total, 43.4% were from Gauteng, followed by the Western Cape with an 18.5% work opportunities for people with disabilities. And the next page speaks to provincial placements according to gender, and this is still for people with disabilities, and we segregated them now according to gender. So we have 528 males in total who were placed, 433 females who were placed, and 961 who were placed. So out of all of these placements, 55% were males and 45% were females. I did mention earlier on that our public employment services affords, gives allocations for subsidies to organizations such as DEFSA, the South African National Council of the Blind. And so in the 2010-11 financial year, 681,000 was the total subsidy amount. What was transferred in that financial year was 481,870.60. What I would like to also just emphasize with regards to these budgetary allocations, these are not driven by ourselves, but by they're driven by demand from the organizations that we support who do these placements. So we do not have a pot that we say this we will give to DEFSA or to the South African National Council of the Blind. It is a demand-driven exercise. So they come to us for these subsidies, depending on the placements that they have. For the financial year 2011-12, placements in employment opportunities for people with disabilities, the total was 240, which is less than what we saw in the financial year 2010-11. But I also would hasten to add that this is so also because we do not as yet have the audited statements for this. So the financial books have not been closed as yet. And so for the visually impaired, we have 176. The hearing impaired, 20. People with physical disabilities, 44. And the total is 240. And again here, most placements have come out of KwaZulu-Natal with 28.75% and the Western Cape with 23.75%. Also please note that the post of the placement official at the South African National Council of the Blind in Pretoria has been vacant for a long time. And these do obviously have an impact on the running, on the efficiencies and the running of these offices. Provincial placements according to gender. We had 53% males in the 2011-2012 financial year, 53% and 47% females. For the 2011-2012 financial year, an allocation of 722,000 was done in terms of the subsidies that we give to. And then a total of 230,000 was transferred in the 2011-2012 financial year. So the next slide speaks to expenditure recorded for the 2011-2012 and MTF allocations. You will see that the total actual spend for 2011-2012 was 103,776, and total allocation for the medium term was 240,907. We have spoken briefly about the employment creation through our sheltered employment factories, but safe to say that we've drafted various business proposals to organizations such as the WNR CETA, the FPLM CETA, to propose the use of sheltered employment resources and manufacturing background to help create jobs, not only for people with disabilities, but also for young people. And we'll be piloting a project with basic education in three provinces. Like I said, we started with the Eastern Cape to assist in providing gainful employment to young people and provide them with skills, both in business and technical skills, in the manufacturing of furniture. Our vision at Sheltered Employment Factories is to establish a national network of factories and factory outlets that contribute to economic empowerment of people with disabilities, and this will also include ex-combatants, like I had alluded to earlier, and that will support metropolitan, rural, and local community organizations and enterprises, where disabled people are to contribute to and be integrated into the nation's economy. I had already spoken to this slide, but we shall, just in terms of gender profiling, in terms of males and female employees per location, you will see that, for example, in Bloemfontein, we have almost 40 males, and we have and fewer females. The slides that are to follow in terms of profiling, I mean, this is just really for information purposes. You will see here, for example, that in terms of gender profiling, we talk to Bloemfontein, Durban, East London, Epping, Kimberley, Gabeni, Pietermaritzburg, Port Elizabeth, Potchefstroom, the Rand, Silverton, and Springfield. At Sheltered Employment Factories, we have desegregated again the number and type of disabilities per location and factory. And so you will see on the right-hand side of that graph that we have people with epilepsy, low IQ, people who have hearing impairment, speech, medical, visual, physical, and mental disability, and others. The next slide speaks to our initiatives as a department in dealing with child labor issues. As you know, that the government has committed itself to the elimination of the worst forms of child labor, and we've adopted a very holistic approach in curbing the issue around child labor. And this we have done through a roadmap, which is called the Child Labor Program of Action, CLPA, which is to assist in the prevention, reduction, and the eventual elimination of child labor. The Child Labor Program of Action serves to focus and guide the efforts of government departments, civil society groups, including business organizations, labor federation, and organizations serving the interests of children. These would obviously be all of our social partners in the Department of Labor. the key elements of this program are about targeting the implementation of government and other stakeholders' programs and policies on poverty, employment, labor and social matters more effectively in areas where children work, where the work children do has serious negative effects on them. And it's about promoting new legislative measures against worst forms of child labor, strengthening of our national capacity to enforce legislative measures, and increasing public awareness and social mobilization against worst forms of child labor. And we have made significant strides in providing guided policy guidance and leadership around issues of child labor. And we have done this through the Children's Act as amended in 2007. And we have also ensured that this amendment deals explicitly with child trafficking, children used by adults to commit crime, and the commercial sexual exploitation of children. It also reinforces the provisions on forced labor in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. So the Department of Labor further published regulations to protect the health and safety of child workers at work under both the Basic Conditions of Employment Act of 1997 and the Occupational Health and Safety Act of 1993. So for which all of these acts we are custodians of. The second phase of the CLPA, which was adopted by Cabinet on the 4th of February 2007, covers the financial years of 2008-2009 to 2012-13, and it represents South Africa's proposed actions enabling us to reach the 2015 target for the eradication of the worst forms of child labor. And so the CLPA identifies a very wide range of activities falling within this mandate, and within government departments and our agencies. So for each activity, the CLPA identifies the lead department as well as other departments and agencies, including non-governmental ones, which would be involved. So the implementation of the CLPA is coordinated by the Implementation Committee, with representatives from government departments, organized business, labor, and civil society. So the Department of Labor forms Child Labor Intersectoral Group, a body consisting of key government departments, non-governmental organizations, and employers and employees organizations in all the provinces, and these meet on a bi-monthly basis. The purpose of these meetings is to ensure that the synergy in the implementation of the CLPA and other government initiatives. It's also to facilitate the process of eliminating the most hazardous forms of child labor, with the long-term goal of eliminating all forms of child labor in the end. It's also to enable us to coordinate policies and programs in working towards the complete elimination of child labor, creating awareness and ensuring the mainstreaming of children's issues, specifically the CLPA matters, in the broader awareness of creating strategies within the structure. So we monitor progress also on the elimination of child labor. So there is an element for monitoring and evaluation as well. So in May of 2010, South Africa became a signatory to the International Labor Organization, the ILO's roadmap towards the elimination of the worst forms of child labor by 2016. And so we have committed ourselves to host a national Child Labor Day on an annual basis to highlight the issues around child labor and to popularize this roadmap. The first one was held in 2011 on the 4th of April, and at the moment we are still working on a date for 2012. Which chairperson we shall inform the committee on as soon as the date has been set. I'd like to speak to the issues around gender transformation and disability in the workplace within the Department of Labor. I did in the beginning say that we have taken a two-phase approach. The one approach is outward looking, and the other one is internal. This particular slide on women employed at SMS level as of the 31st of March 2012, you will see that at the bottom, we say here that we have a total staff complement of 7,057 employees within the Department of Labor. The total number of women within the department is 3,954. And so that in percentage terms, we have 56% of women within the Department of Labor. And we have achieved a target, well, we have achieved a 37.8% percentage for women at SMS level. And this was set against a target of 34%. So we've exceeded the target. But I also would like to add that these statistics have not been updated. In fact, we are sitting at about 40.2% at the moment, or 38.2% at the moment. But we are by no means comfortable with the targets that we have set for ourselves. So we're endeavoring to do more. The department has also implemented our own internal policies, and we have policy provisions for reasonable accommodation for persons with disabilities. So we have now implemented the reasonable accommodation for persons with disabilities, which is guided by the Public Services Handbook and its internal integrated policy on gender, disability and youth, and also the occupational health, safety and environment policy. Our policy within the department makes provision for reasonable accommodation, and it's done in line with the gender, disability and youth objectives. The policy provisions address the following forms of reasonable accommodation. So first of all, we'd like to make the department building physically accessible to people with different types of disabilities. We are also reassigning non-essential tasks elsewhere, modifying and adjusting to a job or to the working environment that will enable a person with disabilities to function. And we've also have provision of employee health and wellness intervention to this effect. Within the department, we have also ensured that the capacity building or empowerment programs targeting women, and we do this, of course, through our own human resources development strategies. And we have, at the moment, an accelerated development program targeting women and people with disabilities. In the next slide, I would just like to speak to the achievements here. Our department has institutionalized gender transformation under our Employment Equity Plan and Strategic Plan for 2012 to 2017. So our strategic plans go up to 2017. And the department has a policy on gender, youth and disability, which was approved in 2007. And the objectives of this policy is to ensure that gender, disability and youth issues are mainstreamed in all of our governmental policies. We also are wanting to promote a culture of recognizing the importance of GDY, considerations in all of our management decisions within the department. This is also to ensure that all management employment practices and decisions linked are sensitive to gender, disability and youth issues. It's also to facilitate aligned and integrated reporting of the department's contribution to the broad economy on gender, disability and youth, to ensure that the presidency and the portfolio committees in parliament are informed about the performance of all our relevant public entities linked to the Department of Labor. And we are at the moment encouraging uniform reporting by all public entities linked to the Department of Labor, and ensuring that the achievements of our GDY objectives and mandates are monitored internally and externally. And we've also are ensuring that our human resources planning supports is GDY Jackson. Now, as part of our employment equity plan objectives, reasonable accommodation for people with disabilities is reported on in the National Employment Equity Consultative Forum, which meets regularly. The Department of Labor, as you know, is the custodian of the Employment Equity Act, which seeks to eradicate any racial and gender divide and also to redress the imbalances of the past. And so we strive by all means that we should lead by example in these efforts. We are also the custodians of the Technical Assistance Guidelines on Employment of People with Disabilities that is intended to assist with the practical implementation of aspects of the Act relating to the employment of people with disabilities within the workplace. And so, as a department, we have achieved and exceeded the national target of 2% for people with living with disabilities by 0.6%, as 2.6% of our current staff current staff is employed within the department. And we are concerned that these are concentrated at lower salary levels, and we are trying by all means to make sure that it is not only limited to lower levels. The next slide speaks to gender transformation measures. Our recruitment and selection policy, as well as our employment equity plan, make it compulsory and requires us that we have employment equity representatives as part of the shortlisting and interviewing process. And we do this because we want to ensure that issues around gender equity, around disability and youth become part and parcel of our DNA when we interview people, when we employ people, so that we do not err by saying that we'll only do it in the way in which we advertise, but we'll also do it in the way in which there is representation in the interviewing panels. And so the representatives observe and monitor whether managers and supervisors are shortlisting in line with their gender issues in mind, as outlined in our employment equity plans. And also the Director General has appointed in writing that the Chief Director of our Human Resources Management at Head Office should become the chairperson of the National Employment Equity Consultative Forum, which monitors gender transformation under our employment equity plan. And this is basically just to say we do take our employment equity very seriously. And so as required by the Employment Equity Act Section 24, the department has appointed formally all senior managers to take responsibility for monitoring and implementing our employment equity plan. And all senior managers now are going to be assessed on employment equity in the annual performance. So the extent to which senior managers are employing on the basis of equity is a consideration also in terms of the way in which our performance is measured. On a monthly basis, representativity profiles are drawn from PESAL for the whole department and are presented in the National Employment Equity Forum and also in local employment equity fora to monitor progress and recommend appropriate action where progress is slow. So as part of the department's strategy, the targets for women and also people with disability is specified and is translated into policy to inform both our recruitment processes and also our employment equity plans. And I'd just like to add that in terms of our employment equity plans, Niresh will speak to those issues at length. Our training and development programs to empower or build capacity for women within the department in order to advance them to SMS level. We have, as a department through our EE plan, identified that there's a lack of training programs that are targeted at advancing designated groups. And the director responsible for training and development has been tasked to develop programs that will ensure that designated groups and various senior managers have also been tasked to make sure that there is sufficient budget for the for training for this purpose. There is also a policy on career management and retention to ensure that people from designated groups are retained. I think that you will appreciate that I think a few years ago there used to be what was called a revolving door syndrome for in terms of affirmative action. No sooner have you employed a black person, company X comes with a counter offer of 100,000 and off they go. And there's also now a trend, I suppose, that we are seeing where especially people with disabilities and women in senior management positions are being lured into companies in that way. So our retention strategies are absolutely critical in ensuring that people are happy in the workplace and we do what we're supposed to do. So this policy will also be explicit in talking to issues of succession planning and people with disabilities. In the meantime, the department has also developed draft guidelines on succession planning after discussion with the stakeholders. It will be important. The challenges that we face as a department is that we have put through a bid to National Treasury to fund the establishment of a gender unit, and this was rejected. And so in the absence of this unit, it is extremely difficult for us to ensure that all gender matters are mainstreamed into our developmental plans. You know, the challenge that we have with mainstreaming, whether it's on the basis of gender, disability, or youth, is that without the appropriate budget to do these things, you can't have proper measuring tools to do it, and you can't institutionalize these policies appropriately. So the department is still working towards addressing the challenge of reaching the 50% women representation at SMS level. Because as you can see, we already have 56% women within the workplace, but we would like to strive for a 50% minimum women representation at SMS level. So in terms of our future plans, the department has been working towards redressing gender imbalances amongst other discriminatory factors in the workplace, particularly at senior management level, where women have entered into positions that were historically regarded as a male domain. The Department of Labor is also going to play a pivotal role in conducting research as part of promoting decent work on the experiences of women in senior management positions in government departments in order to review this legislation and policies as a means of intensifying efforts to improve participation of women in the workplace, especially in senior management positions. So emphasis will be on the following: that first of all, we'll embark on headhunting of candidates from designated groups, women, black people, and people with disabilities, to ensure that we meet our targets. If other internal recruitment processes have failed, we'll also create a conducive climate to reasonably accommodate employees with disabilities by orientation of other staff on disability issues. The granting of assistance to develop women, black people, and people with disabilities within the department, and also we will endeavor to provide training to employees with disabilities to address career advancement and job performances according to TAG on the employment of people with disabilities. Thank you very much. Thanks. We'll take questions.
Thank you very much for this comprehensive presentation. I will hand over to members to get some clarifications, questions, and raise concerns. But before I do that, I just want to ask you just to explain the reason for the discrepancy with regards to the budget, the discrepancy between
the transfers and the allocation, whether it was as a result of demands or maybe if we can explain then. Let me allow members then to ask questions. And Member Ketana, Member Lamula, Member Kiki, Member Connie, and Member Paulson, in that order.
The presentation, the one thing that I would like to highlight on disability is that when you talk, is that when you're talking about, you said you'll adopt an inward and outward approach as regards the department. You are outward, were you referring to non-profit making organization, the shelter factories where disabled people are trained? Indeed, they were adopted from the past, and they are still kind of in racial lines, because the ones that you're referring to in Gauteng, for example, the handicraft one where they manufacture furniture, those are doing well. But I can tell you, the rest, especially where blacks are sheltered, do assembly and packaging. I mean, like mines would bring balls and nuts, disabled people put them together and they get a remuneration out of that. Or packaging would be, that is assembly, where they do balls and nuts. Where they do packaging, they'll be putting labels on, like Jogo tea, and putting Jogo as a label of that particular tea. That also comes from factory as a contribution, I mean from private sector. And those can't break even. I can tell you they depend heavily on government. They can't break even, and conditions and including remuneration is very low. The ones that do handicraft, like furniture and sell it to industry, those are doing well, and in the past they used to be donated by white. Now, you see the picture you've painted there is that indeed disabled, there's something happened. Yes, with non-profit organization, and you said in the Department of Labor, I don't dispute that you're doing well, 2.6%. But the point is the general picture in the country, private sector as a whole, I mean, the economy is very dominated by private sector. Private sector as a whole, and including government departments, if you exclude labor, I don't know if they are reaching the 2%. And the previous report was that they are hardly reaching 2%, and private sector is doing very bad, including government departments. I wish you had hammered that, because unless Department of Labor, which is doing well and we must congratulate, unless Department of Labor through its Employment Equity Act is able to monitor what is happening in government departments and also in private sector, and in a sense enforce that, disabled people will never be covered there. So I would like you to comment there. Just exclude labor and non-profit making shelters. Talk about the other departments of public sector and private sector. How are we performing as regards employment equity for the disabled? The last question. This I keep on hammering because I love you. Don't forget me. I have a passion for it. You know, I think we're going to resolve the problem of job creation for girl child, for youth, for women and everybody. If we adopt the German thing, where vocationally 60%, because, I mean, let's be honest, we're not going to be professors solo. You can't produce a society where everybody is a genius, where everybody is a straight A, gets 7 distinctions. We can't. And if Germany's model is 60% of the whole population do vocational, that makes sense, because and their job trained on the job. If girls go to factories and they are taught how to textile industry or footwear or leatherware, and girls are there at the factory, they are trained and they are paid until they get their certificate. I mean, this we've seen in nurses. In the past, nurses took girls from JC and they would be staff nurse until they are a sister. But that was a very successful, because you are trained on the job and paid. If parents can support, at least that is a self-sustaining training. Now you can imagine if it was happening all over industry, all industry in South Africa, like it is happening in Germany, it is happening in industry. I'm just saying that NETLAG is the Department of Labor engaging and seeing if industries is able to train, kind of apprenticeship. I have a strong passion, because I think if we engage in this, because it's not theoretical. I understand in motor car industry, 4 days you are at the workshop trained while you are paid. Only one day a week you go for theory, where they just tell you what the engine of a car is. But basically, 4 days in a week you are at the workshop. And that has been very successful. I want to hear if you are engaging NETLAG industry about this on-job training.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is also on the discrepancies in the budget. And you know, I don't know if this could not go to NGOs, which are already at this point in time battling to stay alive and to keep up with especially disabled persons. And I know so many NGOs, we have a great problem only in the Western Cape, so what about all the other provinces? That is my first question. My second one is on your stats given to us on physical disabled persons, and especially in the Western Cape, you have none that were placed. I cannot believe it. Because, if you know, just an hour's drive from here is Worcester. And that is really the mecca of disabled institutions, in all sorts of institutions. I cannot believe that you have nothing there for the Western Cape only. I will be monitoring the other provinces, so I can't at this point in time speak for those. And also, yeah, on the opportunities that were for disabled persons or people in the Western Cape. So if you can give us an answer to that one. And my next question is on your vision. Do you have any strategic plans, or are you busy with any strategic plans on how to reach and accommodate especially those in the rural areas that are disabled? Because those people just sit there in the sun and they can contribute to the economy and they are not included. Are there any time frames set for you to reach your strategic plans? And on the child labor program, While you were speaking on this one, it came to my mind that what will the impact be on the film industry? Because so many children are being used there, and they are remunerated for what they do there. How will this affect the income there? Some households are dependent on that. What is the other one? The other question. Chair, I'll stop there for a while. Thank you.
Policies that were developed 55 years ago they have policies that now are in line with the order of the day. It's worrisome because I'm sure it's supposed to be like this. And the second one, Chair, is on the issue of the collaboration with the Department of Women, Children, and people with disabilities. I think this is a portfolio committee, so the portfolio committee on women, children, and persons with disabilities. And therefore, the departments, when they come and give us presentations, we expect also to report on their collaboration with the department. For instance, on the issue of, mentioned the issue of child trafficking, it's just the mentioned, Chair, that they are dealing with the child trafficking and so on, because this needs a holistic approach. It cannot be the work of one department, and this department is key to this particular one, and even child labor, the department is key on this particular one. Chair, the last one is the gender unit. It's worrisome that they have failed the bid to establish the gender unit. I'm not sure how are they going to monitor this without the gender unit, because honestly they should tell us who now is responsible for the gender unit. I did not get that particular information, but is there someone that is a result, there's not much report on women on the report, because there's no one that is responsible for this. If there's someone, just explain to us, because when you come and present here, we are not the portfolio committee on labor, so most of the things will be new to us. So when we come and report, we need a depth information so that we are able at the end of the day. We are a portfolio committee for women and children, and then we get reports from different departments. So the departments, when they come to report to us, we must be able, not as a portfolio committee, to be able to assist the department that we are dealing with directly. So honestly, it is worrisome if there's no one that is now in charge of the link, because, I mean, today women are supposed to be prioritized in each and everything. And I hear that you say you are almost there, you are at 7% for women and so on, but the higher level, I don't see any woman. There are few women. Actually, the women are only at top level. I think at provincial level, they do not reach the target, the employment equity target. When I look at the slide that is in our position, unless there's a different slide, I'm not sure.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Chair, I just want to be brief. The first one is, can we have the reason for rejecting the establishment of gender units? Because it was just stated it was rejected. And in page, I numbered them, page 5 and 6, where you have a placement according to disability. I just want to ask, what happens to disabled people in the Northwest and the Northern Cape? Because they are not included here. Do we have people who are not disabled, or what is happening? Because I know that they are there. And then, in the very same page, the physical disabilities, Mpumalanga, 6. Is it the whole of Mpumalanga? Can I get a clarity in that? And the disability profile, it's in black and white. You can't see all the graphs that you have. The graph that we have just talked about disability profiles, it's in black and white, and we want to know which one is which. And the last one, I just want to find out, when you talk of FDF, we in the past we used to have a very good factory at Harangua, the factory for cane furniture for disabled. I would like to know, is it included under Gauteng, or is it still in existence? I just want to say that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question that I forgot. Disabled people, the biggest challenge for disabled people in the workplace is transport. And now, recently, on a regular basis, I have this coming up onto my table. Does the department, perhaps, in their policy, has anything referring or that one can read on what your plans are, what your strategies are on transport for disabled people, especially to the workplace? Thank you.
Thank you. Just before you respond to that, if you can also tell us what the department does to strengthen national capacity to enforce legislation. And then the other one, and how do you monitor matters related to child labor? And I wonder if you can also tell us how many children have been identified in South Africa that have been looked in as worst forms of child labor in previous financial years. And then the other one is about the relationships with the department. I think members have already spoken to. And I then give this to your entourage to.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the questions. We will do it this way. Mr. Seafield will take questions on child labour, all the questions that have been asked around child labour. In terms of our internal employment equity questions, Mr. Peggy Gama will take those questions. Niresh will take questions on the reporting, the monitoring around employment equity. Mr. Nundwangu will take questions on SEF, and I will take questions around the issues of transport for disabled people. there will also be the discrepancy in terms of the payments and the allocations. Esther will take those questions. Okay. Just the question around transport for people with disabilities going to and from the workplace. The Department of Transport has worked on a policy, in fact, around transport for people with disabilities. This is done in the context of public transport policy. And I know that early last year, they launched the policy. I think it was more for internal consumption, but I know that policy is in the making. The Department of Labor would not be dealing with that matter directly. It would be an issue that we would deal with the Department of Transport. And the other question that I will take is the issue around vocational training that Honorable Gegana has asked. I think it's an important question. It's something that we need to be really looking at. Now that the CETA's skills development has moved out of the Department of Labor and gone to higher education, we need to sit with them and collaborate more with the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education around these issues. In the meantime, the UIF and the Compensation Fund are dealing with this issue of what happens to people once they have been retrenched post post-retrenchment, the reskilling and retraining, so that people can find alternative employment. The UIF and the compensation fund are both dealing with that issue. And I think as soon as we have firmed up on a policy of sorts around around this matter, we would be able to ask that we share it with the portfolio committee and update you on progress. Thank you. I'll hand over to Virgil.
Thank you, DDG. Thank you for the members. Just there were a few questions relating to children in employment and how the Department of Labor deals with children in employment. The first question relates to children in the performing arts that were asked in the film industry, as the Honourable Member Lamula has asked in this house. The Department of Labor recognizes the fact that in certain instances it would be rather, I wouldn't want to use the word foolish, unwise to have a very old person advertising, as an example, Huggies or Pampers. And therefore the Department of Labor recognizes that in certain instances you would need to allow children in particular circumstances to do some form of work. Now, the basis for our approach is fundamentally the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, that firstly prohibits the employment of children before they reach the school leaving age, which is 15, or the year in which they complete compulsory education. And therefore, there's a blanket ban on the use of children to perform work. But having recognized that reality, that you need in certain instances children to do certain things, the Department of Labor has developed what we call a children in the performing arts monitoring system, where, as an example, advertising houses, film industry needs to apply to the Department of Labor to use these children to do these kinds of. And there's a system that was first run on a national basis, but has now been devolved to the provinces where these activities normally take place, that allows that the children that are used, that there's an application system for these advertising houses, these commercial houses, to use children in that specific instance. So if, for example, you see a child on Isa Dingo, there needs to be a permit behind the allowance of that child to perform on Isi Dingo, as an example. So Isi Dingo, taking that example forward, cannot employ a child unless there is a permit for the application. The parent is involved, the school is involved in terms of what is required for the child while the child is supposed to be at school, whether there is sufficient rest period, whether there is sufficient nutrition, whether there is supplemental education that is needed for the child in the event that a child might be out of school for that particular time. So all these requirements are in place for a child that is in the performing arts, as an example. So the system monitors that. The system monitors also in relationship to the age of that specific child, so that for a particular category of child, there's a particular set of conditions that would apply for the child to be there. If, for example, it's a girl child, if you will, there needs to be constant supervision beyond just the child's parents that are there, and that are the requirements of the permit system that we call the CIPA permit system, children in the performing arts system. So there is a permit system that allows for that reality. Two fundamental reasons that give rise to child labor. One is poverty, and the other is access to education. And therefore, we recognize that if you address the issues of child labor, you need to address it in a holistic manner. Therefore, you cannot just, yes, you need to draw the child out of the child labor, but what is it that you put in place to address the child? And I'm going to the second question that you asked, the monitoring of child labor. Therefore, they need to put in place a system that addresses the holistic needs of the child in the instance of child labor. Therefore, the Child Labor Program of Action is a program that has been adopted by Cabinet, and this CFIA incidentally, we need to report to Cabinet in terms of how far have we gone as a country in a holistic fashion in dealing with child labor. Therefore, you really hear us talk about X number of children have been drawn out of employment, but rather, how have we dealt with access to education? How have we dealt with social support? How have we dealt with the provision of services for children in this regard? And those are the holistic issues that we want to address in relationship to child labor. And that's how we want to monitor child labor. There was a question on worst forms of child labor and whether we have some indication on the worst forms of child labor. You would agree with me that if in the definition of the worst forms of child labor, there are specific categories that we talk to. Two of the specific categories that I want to refer to are children used by adults to commit crime, but also the second category that I want to talk to is commercial sexual exploitation of children. You would agree with me that it is very difficult to get statistical information around those two categories, purely because those forms of child labor, worst forms of child labor, are hidden forms of child labor. You never hear of if you, for example, go to a household where a child is used as a domestic worker, the standard excuse you will get is, I'm staying with my auntie, she's helping me to go to school. And there will be some degree of collaboration between the child worker and the parent. So it's very difficult to identify these worst forms of child labor. But what I can provide you is information around the status of the extent of child labor in South Africa generally in relationship to this. And I'll come to those figures in a bit. So with respect to the specific question around worst forms of child labor, it is very difficult to provide you with direct information around how many children are there, purely because of the nature of, in fact, at the global level, they are still struggling to get a methodology that would allow us to be able to get a grip on the issue, on worst forms of child labor. More often than not, the information that you will get is more guesstimates rather than actual figures around this. But let me give you an indication of what the status of child labor in South Africa is at this point in time. I'm getting old, I need to put on my glasses. I'll be quick, Chair. There seems to be about 116,000 children that is doing work in South Africa that is prohibited by the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Beyond that, there's about 431,000 children that do excessive work. Now, a distinction between work and labor, and maybe that's an important distinction for this House that at some point we need to talk to, the distinction between work and labor. 36,000 children appear to be absent from school because of work-related activities. This is against the backdrop where we have 99.6% enrollment figures in education, which is, if you compare it with the rest of the world, whether it's a developing or developed country, we far exceeding most of these countries. 99.6% of our children that are school-leaving age is now in education. So that is the extent of child labor in South Africa. We will provide Cabinet with a full report on the Child Labor Program of Action and its implementation at an holistic level, but also on the statistics as we go along. We hope to do that within the course of this year if we get an appropriate stop. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm aware that there are still a lot of outstanding, questions to be attended to, but unfortunately, we are pressurized with time. I want to make a request because we have sittings at 2, and members have to go and it's really. Can I make a request that you provide us in writing all those outstanding questions, but not we are not stopping you from giving us additional information if
one of those. I think I feel that we should have had more time, you know, because there is really a lot to hear by us from you, especially in terms of children. So can you do that for us?
I'll do so.
Yes, give us the rest of the outstanding responses in writing, but as well as add some more information that you feel like, I mean, you feel it's important. We would actually at this point in time have to end our meeting.
Chair, I actually wanted to indicate that I do have some presentation to share the information that can have access to.
I'm going to distribute the presentation. Okay, we'll appreciate that. Honorable members and the department from Labour, let me once more thank you very much. And also, you know, express our appreciation for availing yourself when we needed you, and indicate that this is our first but not our last meeting with you. Thank you, honorable members, as well, and the meeting is adjourned.
You were the lucky one. You were the lucky one.